Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed podcast brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 413. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Toolshed Pod. Going through my top 500 Dynasty rankings update for September in this episode. That just came out on Friday the 12th, so if you missed that, go check that out over on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com, also linked right there in my Twitter bio. I'll go over some of the new overall top 25, you know, top 10s by position, and also discuss some risers and fallers, some intriguing names that I haven't talked about on this show overly recently. Before we get into all of that, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. You can find all of my content either on RotoBaller or over on my Patreon, again, toolshedfantasy.com. And make sure you check out all of the great content over on RotoBaller. RotoBaller's premium pass, regardless if you're using it for MLB to end the season or football, basketball, hockey, college, you know, and they got everything over on RotoBaller. Such a great site with such great content. You got, you know, you can import your leagues with TeamSync, get expert advice, customized for your league-specific settings, lineup assistant tools, prop picks, DFS stuff, free agent finders, so much great content. The premium pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you a little 10% discount there. All right, so let's start with the rankings in general. The new top 25 overall. Same top two, Bobby Witt Jr. at number one. Shohei Ohtani at number two. And I was kind of thinking about this the other day, too, with Ohtani still being at number two overall, being 31 years old. But obviously, this is not, you know, your normal 31-year-old baseball player. This is arguably the best and most talented player in the history of the game. So, yeah, that warrants it still being number two overall at age 31. Soto up to number three. Corbin Carroll, four. Ellie De La Cruz, five. 6 through 10, Ronald Acuna Jr., Paul Skeens, Kyle Tucker, James Wood, and Tarek Skubal. 11 through 15, Gunnar Henderson, Fernando Tatis Jr., Aaron Judge, Roman Anthony, Nick Kurtz, who just hit a 7,000-foot home run on Saturday night, 493 feet. That is the longest of the season by nearly 10 feet. Trout had the previous one at 484. Absolutely. It was a grand slam, too. Absolutely demolished it. He's at 15. 16 through 20, we got Julio Rodriguez, Garrett Crochet, Jackson Churio, Junior Caminero, Jose Ramirez. 21 through 25, Wyatt Langford, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Yordan Alvarez, Francisco Lindor, and Jazz Chisholm Jr. rounding it out. It feels weird to have three pitchers in that top 25, but I feel like all three are warranted. That's the top tier of pitching right now. I think very clear cut. Like, I would be surprised if anyone else had, you know, anybody else in ahead of any of those three guys. Like, for me, it's those three, and then it's a drop off, you know, down to the Hunter Browns, the Yamamotos, you know, that tier. So three guys, three pitchers, top 25. Don't used to do that too often in my personal rankings, but again, those three guys are the three studs of this game. All right, let's go position by position now with top 10s for each. We got at catcher, Cal Raleigh, Semyon Basayo, Hunter Goodman, William Contreras, Will Smith, Augustin Ramirez, Ben Rice, Shea Langeliers, Adley Rutschman, and Drake Baldwin. Going over to first base, we got Nick Kurtz, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Pete Alonso, Rafael Devers, who is now eligible at first base in all formats, I believe. He's got his 20th start recently. So he's number four, Bryce Harper, five, Josh Naylor, six, Matt Olson, seven, Vinny P, eight, just hit his 30th home run the other day. Welcome to the 30-homer club, Vinny P, Jonathan Aranda, and then Sammy Basayo at number 10, though if you want a different name because I mentioned him at catcher, Tyler Soderstrom is right after him. All right, at second base in this position is, this position's gotten kind of weird this year. It's been a really odd year for second base. Most of the top options are down, so you get a little bit of a shakeup here at the top. We had Jazz Chisholm Jr., then Ketel Marte. I mean, people might not like that. Obviously, right now, I would take Ketel Marte for the next year or two, but he's also 4 years older than Jazz, and Jazz is having a really good season in his own right. So Jazz at one, Ketel Marte, two. Bryce Tarang having a phenomenal second half up to the number three spot. Jordan Westberg at four. Michael Garcia, five. Luke Kieschel, six. Jackson Holliday, seven. Ozzie Albies, welcome back to the top 10 at number eight. Christian Campbell still holding on at number nine, mainly because, well, I still believe in Christian Campbell. Absolutely. People that know me know that. But this position is also pretty bad. And then running at the top 10, we have Gleyber Torres, though Michael Arroyo is right on his heels at number 11. At third base, we got Junior Caminero, Jose Ramirez, Jazz Chisholm Jr. He's still eligible there next year as well. Austin Riley at four, Manny Machado at five. Just old reliable, Manny Machado. Just pumping out another great season that just doesn't get talked about enough. Six through 10, Jordan Westberg, Alex Bregman, Michael Garcia. Oh, sorry, that's backwards. Michael Garcia, then Alex Bregman. Addison Barger at 9, and Noelvi Marte at 10. So it kind of falls off after that. Garcia, Bregman spots a little bit, and you get this cluster for me. You know, Chapman, Paredes, Royce Lewis all there. So that back end of the top 10, you could honestly put, I'd say, four or five different guys in those last two spots. At shortstop, we got Bobby Witt Jr., Ellie De La Cruz, Gunnar Henderson, Francisco Lindor, and Zach Neto at 5. 6 through 10, Connor Griffin, Kevin McGonigal, CJ Abrams, Corey Seager, and Trey Turner. All those guys are still in the top 50 overall. Obviously, shortstop is always loaded. That doesn't change now. Outfield, I mean, all these guys are already in my top 10. So you already heard them, but Juan Soto, Corbin Carroll, Ronald Acuna Jr., Kyle Tucker, James Wood at 5. 6 through 10, Fernando Tatis Jr., Aaron Judge, Roman Anthony, Julio Rodriguez, and Jackson Churio. And yes, my boy, White Langford is number 11 there. And starting pitcher, obviously we got the three studs in tier one that I've already talked about. You got Paul Skeens, Tarek Skubal, Garrett Crochet. And then this next tier, you could honestly rank any which way. And it's a very big and close tier for me. Personally, I have Hunter Brown still at four. Yuri Perez, 5. Logan Gilbert, 6. Christopher Sanchez, absolute consistent stud at number 7. I have him in a few leagues, so I'm very happy about. Yoshinobu Yamamoto is 8. Chase Burns, 9. Hunter Green, 10. And then just because I want to add a few more names here, Schwellenbach is 11. Brian Wu, 12. And Jacob Mizjarowski at number 13. Cole Reagans, Freddie Peralta, 14, 15. There we go. I'll go 15 deep on pitchers. So no Strider there. He just keeps falling down. Strider is number, 19 now among starters. So still believe in him, but yeah, hasn't looked like the Strider of old. But maybe we'll see him get back to previous Strider levels here next year. All right, let's get into some risers and fallers. I got 12 names to talk about here. We'll start with Geraldo Perdomo. You know, when I was posting my top 10s per position, like I do every month after my top 500 goes live, you know, I got a few people asking why Perdomo wasn't in my top 10. And when you look at Perdomo, you can say the same thing about Bo Bichette as well. You know, when you look at the player in general, look at what they've done, look at the profile, you think, all right, this guy should be top 10. But then you look at the 10 names I already listed off at shortstop and who you really got to put Perdomo over. So it's just some of these positions. Like if Perdomo was second base, he'd be like fourth or fifth or something like that. But shortstop, so damn deep. But Perdomo is having this a phenomenal year, which I don't think is getting talked about enough. And I was guilty of underranking him as well up until now. And maybe I'm still a little too low on Perdomo. That very well could be the case. He's still only 25. Feels like he's been around longer than that, but still only 25 years old, though he did debut. He debuted very young. I think he debuted at 20 or 21, which is probably why he feels older than 25. But this year, he's already up to 19 home runs, 26 steals, 92 runs scored, 95 RBI, 286, 387, 454 slash line in 149 games. You know, he has a shot at a 120, 130 season with a 286 average. Like, it's giving you really good production across all five categories. And, you know, doesn't have the greatest quality of contact metrics. Like, this is not a masher by any means, but the barrel rate is up to a career best 6.1% this year. Hard hit rate, which is still low, but up to a career best 30.9%. He's hitting the ball in the air more consistently. Sweet spot rate is up around 7.5% this year. Pull air rate up nearly 4% this year. Air rate overall up 4.5%. So hitting the ball in the air more consistently absolutely helps. Average EV, but a mile an hour under league average. But so I don't really think, you know, this might end up being his career best in home runs. Like, I don't see him ever getting above like the low 20s. But the rest of the profile, really, really good. Also, not a burner, but a smart base runner. Like, he's a guy, it shows, like, this year, Josh Naylor has, 27, 28 steals, something like that. Juan freaking Soto has, like, 33 steals and has more, what was that tweet I had the other day? Yeah, Soto has more steals, was it since July 1st or whatever it was, than, I think it was, I combined, it was a Bobby Witt Jr. and Chandler Simpson, yeah. Had more steals than those two guys combined over the last like 2 months or whatever it was, something like that. You get the point. So not always about flat out speed, and you got to have the smarts, and a lot of these guys have it. And Perdomo was one. He's far from a burner, 44th percentile sprint speed, but very smart base runner. He's an efficient base stealer as well. And he's been caught 6 times this season, and the bat to ball skills and the approach. Like, this is one of the best combinations of contact an approach that you're going to find in baseball today. Perdomo's running a 91.3% zone contact rate, 88% overall, only chasing at a 19.1% clip. All of those are well above league average marks, or well better than league average marks, I should say. And he has more walks than strikeouts, 13.2% walk rate to an 11.2% strikeout rate. So look at the Savant sliders. Chase rate, whiff rate, K rate, walk rate, all in the 93rd percentile or higher, 88th percentile, XBA. You know, he is just one of the best, again, best blends of contact and approach. You know, he's hitting the ball a little harder this year. You know, just a really good season all around from Perdomo. Do I think he's going to join the elite and be a, you know, top 30, top 40 dynasty guy? No, but could he absolutely stick as a top 100, top 75 guy moving forward? Absolutely. And that's where I have him now. He was up to 75 overall and could easily see him jumping up a little bit higher than that, though. Again, don't really see him making that jump to, you know, elite superstardom for fantasy. But, hey, you can't really, you know, if you have Perdomo, you are absolutely just loving the season he's had, because you either drafted them super cheap in redraft. I don't even know what his ADP was. Not very high at all. And, you know, you're loving that. Or you got him for cheap. No matter where you got him or how you got him and what format, you got him for cheap or picked him up. So, hey, phenomenal year for Perdomo. Massive ROI. Next guy, Brenton Doyle, jumping back up in my September Dynasty rankings, up to 128. He had fallen out of the top 200. Had a, you know, rough first half of the season. I know there was some, you know, personal issues that he was kind of working through that, you know, would be hard on anybody. So can't really fault him for that. And when you look at the metrics under the hood, even though the surface stats are still down from last year, even though he's been, you know, better of late, the surface stats are actually, for the most part, better than 2024. Barrel rates up a full percent from 10.5% to 11.5%. Average EVs up from 89.2 to 89.9. Hard hit rate up from 41.4% to 44.4%. Zone contact basically the same as it was last year. Overall contact is actually 0.7% better. Chase rates exactly the same. So everything is really either the same or even a little bit better. K rate's the exact same. Walk rate has dipped a little bit, but only 1.7%. He's never really been a big walk rate guy, but again, he has been back to the Doyle of old, or the Doyle of 2024 here in the second half after the All-Star break, in 168 plate appearances, 312, 337, 503 slash line, 9 doubles, 7 home runs, 7 steals. First half, that slash line was only 202, 254, 322. 7 home runs, 9 steals, and basically double as many plate appearances, 331, 12 doubles as well in the first half. So nice bounce back. You know, metrics still look pretty solid, and obviously Doyle is an elite, elite fielder. So that's going to help keep him in that lineup, even when he's struggling. Plus, who else are the Rockies going to throw out there if Doyle is struggling? So he's 27 years old. Obviously still has Coors Field to call home. So if the, you know, price tag is still pretty low this offseason, and, you know, use that overall, you know, underwhelming slash line to your advantage, I would still look to buy low on Brenton Doyle heading into 2026. Next guy up, Shea Langeliers, who, you know, I, again, guilty of underranking him coming into the season, really for the first few months of this season. But now he's up to my number 8 dynasty ranked catcher, and you could really make a case for him as high as 6 or 5, to be honest with you. Or, you know, I could see, you know, if you want to put him ahead of Ben Rice or Ramirez, wouldn't fault you for it. And you know, so I could see him being a few spots higher than that for some people, because he has become really one of the more consistent power bats in the game, especially at this catcher position. After 29 home runs last year, 22 in 2023, 30 home runs so far this year. Also has 7 steals. You know, he had 4 steals and 3 steals the 2 previous years. So gives you a little something in that stolen base department. 30 home runs, 7 steals, 68 runs scored, and 68 RBI as well. So he probably falls a little bit short of the 80 RBI he had last year, but still already has a career high in home runs. And you see, and a career high in runs already by 10. And the average has jumped up 40 points this year. I thought Langeliers was going to be kind of stuck in that 215, 220 purgatory, which is where he was basically every year up until now. 218, 205, and 224 were his averages the first 3 years of his career, with an OBP of 261, 268, and 288. 316 still isn't great, but it's absolutely better. You know, he's not a big walk rate guy. 6-7%. He's kind of settled into that range. But the K rate has dropped dramatically this year, from 27.2%, which was his previous career high last year, down to 19.4% this year. So that is better than league average. Zone contact rate has jumped from 80.3% to 84.3%. overall contact up from 70.8 to 75.9. So not only is the power there, you know, the angles are there too, high, you know, pull air rates, you know, high launch angle, all that. So that's good. But the contact skills are now above average, both in zone and overall. Got a good ballpark to hit in the next couple of years. That, you know, I almost said Oakland, the Athletics lineup, very, very good. Obviously, Nick Kurtz, the emergence of him, and Jacob Wilson, and everybody, Brent Rooker. It's a very good lineup. I think they're top 10. I'll have it up in front of me right now, but I think that's a top 10 offense by a lot of metrics this year. So good lineup context, good ballpark context. A lot to like here. So I think Shea is here to stay as a top 10 catcher, and he's still only 27 years old. A lot to like here with Shea Langeliers. So those are three risers. Again, I have so many risers and followers. So I'm just trying to pick out some of the more intriguing ones that, again, I haven't spoken about on this show recently. So those are my three hitting risers I want to talk about. Now let's talk some fallers. Jason Dominguez is my first faller, and he fell outside of my top 100 down to, where did he fall down to? I lost my document here. Let me pull that back up. There it is. I think I X'd out of it by accident. Down to 112. So, yeah, out of my top 100. He was in the 70s previously. And, you know, it hasn't been a terrible season for Jason. He's hitting 257. That's all right. 331 OBP, you know, 21 steals, but the power just hasn't been there. I mean, the average EV actually is up from 89.4 to 90.9 miles per hour. Hard hit rate is there too, 49.6%. So let me rephrase what I said. The quality of contact is still good, but barrel rate has plummeted from 10.8% to 6.4%. Ground ball rate is higher than league average. The pull air rate, well below league average, only 12.9% pull air rate. His pull rate has dropped 12% from 48.5% to 36.5%. So hitting more ground balls, not hitting the ball to his pull side as frequently as you'd like to see. So that's kind of contributed to him only having 10 home runs in 420 plate appearances this year. But on the flip side, you know, he still has a, you know, solid 83% zone contact rate, 73% overall. You know, those are fine. Chase rate, a little bit worse than league average, but not terrible, 30.9%. Yeah, so I do think there is some room for a rebound, some growth in 2026. Again, quality of contact, still good. Hard hit rate is good. And K rate, still a little high, but 27%. You can live with that. Still has a solid walk rate, 9.8% there. Just really has to start barreling the ball up a bit more. Again, like, that barrel rate has plummeted this year. It's now below average. And even though his average launch angle has gone up, so from 5 degrees to 13 degrees, but only 10 home runs this year. So if he can really get back to that pull side pop again, you know, I think you can see a nice bounce back from Dominguez in 2026, where he could absolutely be back inside my top 100. So I just, maybe he doesn't become the, you know, early round stud that some people thought he could, but could he be an annual 2020 threat with a respectable average? Yeah, absolutely think he can be that. So I think he's a decent buy low this offseason, but I won't be like running out to get him, but I do see some, a path to a rebound here in 2026. And reminder, he's still only 22 years old. Still very, very young. So that needs to be kept in mind for sure. Second faller here, Matty McLain, who, you know, is still giving you some power speed, 14 home runs, 16 steals in 531 plate appearances, which is actually flip-flop what he had back in 2023, 16 home runs and 14 steals in 403 plate appearances. You know, still one of the more elite runners in the game, 92nd percentile sprint speed. You know, quality of contact has dipped, though, this year. Barrel rate down from 10.8 to 7.1%. Average EV is actually right on league average on the nose, 88.6 miles an hour. That is down from 89.3, but that's not really a big drop off. Hard hit rate's down about 3.5%, but still above league average at 38.8%. K rate's still high, 28%. So a lot of his metrics are actually not far off from 2023, although, again, the barrel rate did drop nearly 4%. Zone contact is actually up from his rookie year by 1%. Overall contact is 0.6% higher. Chase rate is better than league average. So, like, the metrics aren't terrible. It's one where you look at the metrics and then you look at the surface slash line, which is 225, 307, 349. Doesn't really kind of line up. So he's another one where I think there's a better 2026 in store for Matt McLain. But my one question is, Reds are starting to bring up some guys. Obviously, Sal Stewart factoring into the picture now as well. I'm just not 100% sure, does McLain get a full-time shot in 2026? That still remains to be seen. But I think the perceived value has taken such a hit this season that it's, a low-cost, target, a low-cost acquisition with a potential, pretty sizable ROI. Like, if it doesn't work out, oh well, we probably didn't pay a lot to get him. And if it does work out and he kind of reverts back to 2023 McLain and some of those metrics turn into better surface stats, then you're probably gonna be pretty happy with that. So I'm not out on Matt McLain by any means, but he did drop in my September rankings. He had to. He is down to number 202 right now. The final faller on the hitter side, Anthony Volpe, who is down to 230 this month. It's been a pretty steady decline for Volpe all season. Kind of similar to McLain, where he's got some power and some speed in terms of the home runs and steals. He's got 19 home runs, 16 steals, but a 206, 268, 393 slash line for Volpe this year in 556 plate appearances. He's starting to lose some time as well. Volpe, I was never super high in Volpe, but I'm not out on Volpe either. And you look at his OPS, it's been chilling around 660 every season, 661, excuse me, for his career. That doesn't look great. OBP has never been above 300. That doesn't look great. Career 221 hitter, that doesn't look great. But at the same time, there's some decent power here. He has a career best 10.2% barrel rate, 89.2 mile an hour average EV, and his second best hard hit rate of his career at 42%. All of those are better than league average. K rate 25.2%. That's pretty in line with his career rate. Walk rate 7.5%. Again, pretty much in line with his career rate there. Those aren't great, but not terrible either. He's been hitting, not enough balls to his pull side in the air, though. Only a 12.9% pull air rate. Zone contact rate has dipped. Overall contact rate has dipped. Though his chase rate has gotten better, though. That's encouraging. But he's now below average 78% zone contact rate overall. But again, a lot of these aren't terrible metrics. Like, there's no huge, massive red flag that's, should scare people away. It's just kind of the combination of, a few things here. Again, not hitting the ball to ideal angles has something to do with it, which I think gets really, blown up when you look at a guy that's, not an elite power guy. So I think it really limits these guys that are like, middle of the road power guys or below, kind of like what we've seen with Anthony Volpe right now. So I don't know. Do we ever see him even come back to top 150 levels? I don't know. I mean, the fact that he still is giving you some home runs and steals helps. Like, he could easily be, with a little speed boost here the last 2 weeks, he could still go 20-20, for the second time in his first three seasons. So that is actually still possible for Anthony Volpe. But I don't know. Is he going to play enough down the stretch? That's kind of the question here. He's starting to lose some time. So if I had to choose between buying low on him or McLain, I think that the price tag is going to be lower on McLain, and I'm still higher on McLain in general. So I would go McLain, but I don't think Volpe is done either as a fantasy relevant guy. though, you know, the Yankees, he got to produce on the Yankees. So looks like his time, he's starting to kind of run thin with patience there, or at least the team is with him. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out moving forward. But again, I don't think Volpe is a complete avoid at this point. There's still some decent metrics to be had there. Same with McLain. Absolutely. So based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
All right. Moving over to the pitching side of things, first pitcher, Kyle Bradish, who has been back for three starts now, 2.65 ERA, 0.94 whip, 32.3% K rate, and a 6.2% walk rate. I was at his season debut and when I was down in Baltimore watching the Red Sox and the Orioles. It was him versus Giolito. Good little pitcher's duel there. Both guys pitched well. And Bradish had six innings, four hits, two runs. Both were solo shots. I remember one was Trevor Story. The other was, who hit the other home run for the Red Sox that day? Was it David Hamilton? Doesn't matter, whatever. But zero walks and 10 strikeouts. And then his last two outings, four innings, two earned against San Diego, seven innings, one earned against Pittsburgh. So obviously not a big time opponent there in Pittsburgh, but Bradish just looked really good in these three starts back. Really, really good. He was really impressive that debut. And I saw him, velocity's there. It's where it was in 2024. Sinker's running down 0.4 miles an hour. Four seamer is actually up 0.1 miles an hour. He is throwing the slider a bit slower, but a mile and a half slower. And the curveball is about half a mile an hour slower. But that slider so far, 118 batting average against, 294 slug, and 32% whiff rate. The curveball, which is his least used pitch at 12%, has a 57% whiff rate right now, but also a 571 batting average against. It's such a small sample size, doesn't really matter that much. But Bradish looks really impressive. In fact, he's still missing bats. The velocity is back to where it was pre-injury levels. The red flag, the concern here, is that he has 11 starts combined the last 2 years. But on the plus side, this is a guy who has an ERA under 3 in each of the last 3 years. Yes, two of those years were 8 and 3 starts, but still, ERA under 3 for the last 3 years combined, which if you combine the last 3 years, is 41 starts, so that's nice to see. And after having a 25% K rate in 2023, over 32% each of the last 2 years. Only 11 starts, but hey, that's a 32% K rate, and his walk rate is down to a career best 6.2% right now. So Yeah, I like Bradish. He's 29 years old, so he's still fairly young for a pitcher, or at least on the youngish side for pitching. And as long as he can stay healthy, I think Bradish can be a top 30 to 40 starting pitcher moving forward. I really do. And he's up. He was a big bump for me in my rankings this month, just because seeing him and he's back healthy, stuff looks good. Stats have been there when he's been on the field. So maybe it's a little risky to bump him up a size. I did, but he's up to 130 overall in my September rankings. So definitely a Bradish believer. Next guy who was only three spots below him at 133 overall is Ranger Suarez, who I feel like just doesn't get talked about nearly enough. I mean, obviously that Phillies rotation, when you're talking about it, you're talking about obviously the long-standing dominance from Zach Wheeler, although he's obviously hurt right now and will miss the part of that next season. You talk about the emergence of Christopher Sanchez as one of the best pitchers in the game. You talk about Jesus Luzardo and how frustrating he is, you know, from start to start, month to month, season to season. You talk about Andrew Painter, you know, being, you know, top pitching prospect who's still yet to debut. And you talk about the struggles of Aaron Nola. Then after those five talking points, then you get to Ranger Suarez, who has quietly just been one of the best pitchers in baseball this year. In 23 starts, he has a 2.77 ERA, 1.15 whip, 6% walk rate, and a 24% strikeout rate. XERA is right in line at 2.97, and a lot of red on that Savant page. I mean, K rate, though it's above average, he's never been a huge K rate guy. So I don't think you're ever going to see him be 27, 28 plus percent, but he limits the walks fairly well and limits hard contact. Like, he limits the damage done against him very, very well. Hard hit rate allowed is only 30.3%. That's one of the best marks in baseball. Average EV allowed only 85.8 miles an hour. Also one of the best marks in all of baseball. His walk rate is in the 85th percentile. Barrel rate around 89th percentile. He's got a good chase rate. That's in the 77th percentile at 30.8%. You know, this does a lot of things well. This doesn't have the huge whiff rates, 23% whiff rate, 24% K rate, but he looks legit. Like, it's hard to really, you know, poke a lot of holes in this profile. I mean, the one thing people don't like is that he doesn't throw hard. His average fastball velocity is 90.5 miles an hour. However, he is technically a six pitch guy, though one of those is only 3.4% usage rate on that slider. But so let's just go with his other five, which are four seamer at 91.3, sinker at 90.1, changeup 79.5, cutter 86.4, and a slower curveball at 73.8. So he is in four different velocity bands, in low 90s with those two fastballs, mid 80s with the cutter, upper 70s to low 80s with that changeup, and low to mid 70s with that curveball. And he uses all five of those to both sides of the plate, or both hitters, side hitters, I mean, lefties and righties. I love to see that. You know, he's not just a three pitch guy against lefties or whatever. He'll use all five of those to both righties and lefties. And actually, that slider, the slider's the one pitch where he only uses that handed batter, which is lefties. 69 of his 74 sliders have been the lefties. But even though that's his sixth most used offering in general, he actually has it be his second most used offering against lefties. Sinker is number one, and then it goes slider against lefties, then four seam, then curve, then changeup, then cutter. So he's a six pitch guy against lefties, really a five pitch guy against righties, mixes very well. Again, limits the damage. There's a lot to like here. Even doesn't blow you away with velocity. Fine. He's 30 years old. He has, you know, good ratios this year, a decent enough K rate. You know, I think he's, you know, a really attractive target for contending dynasty league teams. Probably not so much for rebuilding teams, but I think this could be a top, you know, 30 to 40 arm for the next few years, at least in the short term. And again, that's really attractive to contending dynasty league teams. Let's go back out to the Athletics here. I talked about Langoliers. Now we'll go to a guy that has thrown to Shea Langoliers this season, and that's Jacob Lopez, who is up to 226 overall in my dynasty rankings, one of the bigger risers on the pitching side this month. Another guy who actually has very similar velocity to a Ranger Suarez, you know, around 91 miles an hour on that four-seamer. But, you know, there's a lot to like here with Jacob Lopez. You know, overall ERA sits at 4.08 with a 1.27 WHIP, 113 strikeouts in 92. I was looking at the ERA. I was about to say 408 innings. That'd be like 1908-esque when they were throwing 408 innings back then. But 92.2 innings for Jacob Lopez. ERA in the second half is 3.89 with a 1.19 WHIP after a 4.20 ERA in the first half. And this number is just kind of skewed because the ERA was 3.28 before his last outing on August 24th. Now he's now on the IL, but you know that outing really skewed everything. He had six walks in that outing, six hits, nine runs, two home runs, two strikeouts, and two innings. That really, you know, ballooned that overall ERA. It sent it up 0.8 from 3.28 to 4.08. But I think he warranted the jump, and I'm not really worried about that, you know, that last outing here. But obviously not going to get him back soon as he's on the IL right now. Not really sure. Did they say, trying to find the update here, if he was going to be back at all this year? Forearm injury. A grade one flexor strain. So, yeah, he shut down throwing program, but is hopeful for his return as a reliever before the end of 2025 season. All right, so that feels like he's not coming back. We'll see. I'm not a doctor by any means, but you know, so rest of the year, you're not gonna get really any value from him outside of maybe an inning or two near the end of the season. But I like Lopez a decent bit here. Heading into 2026, again, not a stud by any means, but you know, this is a guy with a 28% strikeout rate, 28.3 to be exact, this year. So he can miss bats. Walk rate is fine, 9.3%. Doesn't give up a lot of hard contact either. 33% hard hit rate allowed. 86.9 mile an hour average EV allowed. So that's nice to see. He does give up a lot of fly balls, though. That's the one thing I really don't like about Lopez. Air rate, 71%. Pull air rate, 27%. So, again, don't like that too much. But zone contact rate allowed is 77%. Love that. 28.3% whiff rate. Love that. Solid 28% chase rate as well. So I think he could be like a top 50-ish pitcher, like back end top 50. Moving forward, especially if that K rate sticks, you know, with being a well above average K rate, which I think it can, even though he doesn't throw hard at all. Now, the four seamer, it's very deceptive given the movement profile on it. So that has a 28.6% whiff rate this year. Slider, 32.7% whiff rate, and changeup, 30.8%. So it can mismatch with those three offerings. Also has a cutter at 87.5 miles an hour. Which not really been the greatest offering for him. But that four-seam slider changeup have all been pretty good offerings for Lopez this year. So, again, some red flags here in terms of that flexor strain. Hopefully that doesn't turn into anything more than just a strain and, you know, the higher air and pull air rates. But a lot of good in the profile as well. 27 years old, 6'4 lefty. So a lot to like with Lopez. So I'd be buying heading into 2026. All right, three followers here on the pitching side. First one, Bryce Miller. Man, Bryce Miller entering 2025 was seemingly everyone's darling, right? Like everyone loved Bryce Miller. you know, wherever I had him ranked, oh, you're not high enough on Bryce Miller, even though I thought I was pretty high on Bryce Miller, because I was also a Bryce Miller guy heading into 2025. And I've even said, I forget where, but I remember saying somewhere, whether it be here or, you know, written that, you know, I think Bryce Miller could be a top 10 dynasty arm at some point this season. No, that has not happened. After a 2.94 ERA in 31 starts last year with a whip under one, 5.59 ERA in 15 starts this year with a 1.37 whip and under a strikeout per inning. That K rate is below league average now. Was never a high K rate guy, but it was 24.3% last year, down to 19.6% this year. Walk rate has ticked up to 8.9%. That's not terrible, but it's 2.5% up from last year. And it's not like he's been unlucky or anything like that. XERA is 5.31, so also very high. His four-seamer is just getting crushed. 250 batting average against, which is not terrible, but a 5.71 slug allowed on that four-seamer. 91.6 mile-an-hour average EV allowed there. The sinker is more of the same. 3.13 batting average against. On the sinker, 5.42 slug allowed and a 96.2 mile an hour average EV allowed there. The splitter, you know, 206 batting average against, but again, 91.5 mile an hour EV allowed there. Knuckle curve, 91.3 EV allowed. Slider, 90.8 EV allowed. And those are his top five pitches, all over 90 mile an hour average EV. Sweeper, only 82 mile an hour average EV allowed, but he only throws it 4.5% of the time. And then the cutter is only used 1.3% of the time. So seven pitch arsenal, top five offerings all have, you know, high average EV allowed. And still got some decent whiff rates in there. So I do think the K rate can tick back up. Splitters, a hair over 30%. Knuckle curve, 31.5%. Slider, 41.9%. So still has some decent whiff rate offerings, but outside of the splitter having a 206 batting average against, none of these pitches have been very good for him at all. I bet you they're all negative run values this year. Yeah, so four-seamer, -7 run value. Splitter's at 0. Sinker, -3. Curveball, -2. Slider's a +1 run value. Sweeper, -1. But really, the big difference here, you know, even though the sinker and splitter were both +8 run values for him last year, which obviously those have taken a step back in terms of effectiveness this year. That's not the biggest thing here. That those are both notable, absolutely, but the fastball, the four seamer, was a +19 run value last year to a -7 this year. Last year, he had a 184 batting average against and a 264 wOBA and a 348 slug allowed. And again, those are up to 250, 379, and 571, respectively. He had a much higher whiff rate on that, much higher strikeout rate on that, put-away rate. Everything was better on that four-seamer last year, and it just has not been even remotely close to being the same offering. Although the movement profile isn't that far off in terms of IVB and horizontal break, you know, you can even say that it's weird because like it's hard to really pinpoint why the four seamer is so off with him, because you know the heat map on it this year isn't terrible, and you know last year it was a better heat map, but I wouldn't even say he's not leaving it over the heart too much. Yeah, more than he did in previous years, sure, but not like a terrible heat map. The command is still good on it. But, yeah, he's not getting it as high in the zone as often. So that's something, but not like a major or something that you'd expect to cause a major drop-off in effectiveness. But, yeah, not a lot to really be encouraged by here with Bryce Miller. You know, I don't think he's 5.59 ERA bad. Maybe he doesn't get back to 2.94 ERA good, but I still think there's a decent pitcher in here, a good pitcher even, just giving up way too much hard contact this year. Overall, a 92.6 average EV, 49.1% hard hit rate. So definitely had to drop him down my rankings. But I do think you can see a little bit of a rebound here from Bryce Miller in 2026. Next guy, Kodai Senga. What happened to Kodai Senga? You know, you look at overall, you know, obviously he was just optioned the AAA not too long ago because he's been really, really bad lately. But overall, he still has a 3.02 ERA, which I think just goes to show like how bad he's been lately and how good he was earlier in the year. This is probably one of the biggest like pre and post All-Star break splits for ERA that you'll ever see. Pre All-Star break, 14 starts, 1.39 ERA, 1.13 WHIP. Post All-Star break in 8 starts, 6.56 ERA and a 1.71 WHIP. So that WHIP in the second half is 0.32 higher than his ERA in the first half. That's just crazy. Look at, you know, it was just like a switch flipped. A lot of 0-1 earned run games in the first half. And then you get, after the All-Star break, right off the bat, 3 innings, 4 earned, 5 innings, 3 earned, 4 innings, 4 earned, 4 1/3, 1 earned, 5 2/3, 2 earned, 5 4 earned, 4 innings, 3 earned, 4.2 innings, 5 earned. So, yeah, definitely a really, really rough second half for Kodai Senga. You know, the forkball hasn't been forking as much lately, though. Overall, the forkball still has really good metrics on it. It's got a 130 batting average against, 188 slug, 42% whiff rate, though Senga's four-seamer, not good, 279 batting average against, 543 slug allowed, 381 wOBA. His cutter, not a good offering as well. Sweeper, not a good offering. Sinker, not a good offering. You know, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty, like low pitches now, but his three most used offerings, which combine for, I'm doing quick math here, 80.3%, the four-seamer, forkball, and cutter. You know, two of those have a batting average against around 280. Slug allowed a 480 or higher. Even like I said, the sweepers, 389 batting average against. Sinkers, 308 batting average against. 889 slug allowed on that sweeper. That's just, so really it's the forkball, and that's really been it. You know, he's still getting some ground balls. That's good to see. Like, Senga is still a good arm. He's just really, really struggling right now because the rest of his arsenal outside of that forkball has not been super consistent this year. And really, for when it comes to striking out hitters, like putting guys away, he only can do that with his four-seamer or his forkball. 101 combined strikeouts on those two offerings, with 71 coming on the forkball. He's 109 total strikeouts. So only 8 other strikeouts on, you know, non-forkball, four-seam offerings. So that's, you know, that's kind of an issue. I think he really needs to reestablish, you know, whether it's the cutter, the sweeper, slider, whatever it is. I think he needs to really get one of those breaking balls going again, you know, better than it has been this year. Because he's really just been really relying on the forkball, four-seam, and cutter. Even last year, those were his three most used pitches by a mile. And when, you know, two of them aren't really working for you, that can lead to some really bad numbers, as we've seen. But obviously, there's still a lot of talent here, though he is 32 now, so he's not really appealing for any rebuilding team. But if you're a contending team, you know, I'd take a shot in buying low on Senga. I mean, this is a guy, every year of his career has been ERA under 3.4, though there was only one start last year. But, you know, three ERA for his career on the nose and 52 starts. So obviously there's some talent here, more than the K per inning in his career, 26.8 career strikeout rate. So definitely still think he could be a top 30 to 40 arm, but I think he needs to do a little bit of a arsenal shift here in 2026. Last name, oh, I don't think I mentioned where he fell to. Senga fell down to 197. I mean, that's probably harsh, but, you know, the age obviously factors in a little bit, this recent performance. So I admit that's probably too harsh of a drop. I got to relook at that, but he did fall a good bit in this set of rankings. Last guy I'm talking about in this episode, Tanner Bibee, fell down to 210. And you know, it's not so much that he was a big, usually like you talk about risers and fallers in an episode like this, where it's about your rankings for a particular month. Really, it's usually the big risers or big fallers. Bybee has just been steadily falling. He wasn't like a guy that dropped 70 spots in this update, but he's just been falling like 20, 30 spots. Like entering the year, he was just outside of 100. Actually, you know, I can tell you because I have my spreadsheet open with all my months. So let's look at, April 2025. Quick little control F here. But yeah, Bybee was 111. And then in May, he was at 133, so 22 spot drop. June, 127, so he kind of stayed consistent there. July, it was 115, so he went back up a little bit. But then the last 2 months, I believe where the bigger drops have come. August, yeah, back down to 143. And then, well, actually, he did drop. after saying all that, I realized he did drop like 70 spots or so. Or 67 spots to be exact, but I think it was because I had him too high. I should have had him lower last month, probably by 20, 30 spots. But yeah, Bybee has just been really underwhelming this year. Not bad, but 4.44 ERA. That's up nearly a full run from last year and up nearly 1.5 runs from 2023 when he had a 2.98 ERA. WHIP is 1.24. K rate has dropped from 26.3% to 20.9%. Walk rate still in line with previous years. But his four-seamers, we can hit around 302 batting average against there, 512 slug allowed. But the cutter's been pretty good, 235 batting average against, 30% whiff rate. Sweeper, 164 batting average against, 291 slug allowed, 31% whiff rate. So those two are pretty solid. You know, sinker, you know, fine for a sinker, no issues there. Changeup, 38.6% whiff rate, 216 batting average against. So I'm starting to sense a trend here, and this is not, you know, every single pitcher that comes through Cleveland, but there's a few examples that really stick out where for the most part, the secondaries are good, fastball is not. Bybee is one of those examples. Tristan McKenzie, huge example. He had two really good breaking balls. Four-seamer was garbage. Gavin Williams kind of fits that mold too. You know, fastball's been super inconsistent. Breaking balls have been pretty good. So I wonder if that's starting to become like an organizational trend. I don't know. I'm just speculating from what I've seen. But when, you know, three prominent guys in Bybee, McKenzie, and Williams, you know, three of the better pitchers that they've developed over the last, you know, what, 5 to 7 years. I forget when McKenzie had debuted. But, you know, that's maybe becoming an issue here. But I don't know. I was never, like, as high as most on Bybee. But I don't think he's mid-4 ERA bad either. You know, xERA is under 4. And actually, his xERA has been really consistent year to year in that 3.7, 3.75 range. I do think you see a bit of a bounce back, but I think only to like top 50 to 60 levels, as opposed to like top 25, 30, as you know many thought he was, where that kind of perceived value was entering the year. Don't think he gets back to there, but 26 years old, you know, still has some good secondary offerings. Got to fix that four-seamer, absolutely. So I do think there's a little bit of bounce back appeal here for Bybee, but not to the levels, again, that people kind of thought, you know, he was at, you know, that perceived value. I don't think he gets back to there, but I definitely think you can see him bounce back to being like a top 150 dynasty guy in 2026. That's going to wrap me up. Again, dynasty rankings are live. Prospect rankings are live. Redraft rankings are live. All of the final updates here are live, except for OBP Dynasty, which is coming up in the next day or so. Let's close the season strong with those rankings, get you some championships. Hopefully you all are doing well in your leagues, either getting that money spot, getting that championship. So hopefully the end of the season treats you well, and I will be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care. Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.